Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, sorry about that, folks. I'm making a live, your microphone's live as we, as I speak.
Excellent.
Oh, what a day. I'm pretty certain I have the infamous Sam Moffey and Peter Haven with me.
You got me. It's been different. You were right about the glitch that was going on, Simon, in your earlier email today.
Oh man, I've spent actually the last several days in hell over this problem. So, how are you guys doing?
Well, I'm doing very well, Simon. It's good to hear your voice again, and Sam's too. Good to be back.
Same from after the weekend I experienced last weekend due to the my own indiscretions in driving. I had it's wonderful to hear your voice, Peter, and of course yours too, Simon.
Okay, you can tell lies. I don't care. I mean, you know, and seriously, it's been an ugly week. And,
I'm sorry to hear that, Simon, but it can only get better, right?
Oh, I doubt it. Yeah, I'm pretty certain that someone will ruin next week. Yeah, it's only a matter of time. I didn't even get the opportunity to introduce you. I mean, you know, obviously we have author and activist from Youngstown, Ohio, Sam Moffey. You know, and Sam, how was your vacation last weekend?
It actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be or people had told me. It was, and a lot of it had to do with the speakers that the school, the OVI, or Operating a Vehicle Impaired, set up. They were surprisingly fun, engaging, and educational in regards to what's happening in law enforcement and treatment and things of that nature. It's kind of strange, though, when I received my first OVI. It was reduced for many, many reasons as long as I went to the class for 3 days, they would not charge me with anything, which is what I did. But it was interesting that on my table, there were 7 people there who had 3rd and 4th DUIs, OVIs, excuse me. And I sat there and going, well, they're the ones, if you're 4 and more, I don't think you should be at a 3-day class where I was looking to at. You know, it's kind of, you've got 4 OVIs going for you, or 4 plus. I don't think you should be probably driving a vehicle anywhere near one. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, I have one, but really don't have one according to the law. And these other guys have a lot more of them. They probably should have been. I'm checking to see if they have ankle bracelets on, this, that, or anything, and they don't. So it's kind of strange being, I guess that's the way the law is, though. So I didn't argue, got it over with, learned a few things, made a few friends. Invited them all up for wings on tomorrow at Monday at this place. And away we go.
Wings and beer, right? You invited them for wings and beer.
No beer, just wings. I told them I wasn't going to buy them. I'd be glad to buy them some wings, but they're on their own when it comes to buying the beers.
Well, and
Peter, welcome back. I think you had a pretty grim week last week.
I had a very hectic week, yes.
Yep. Did the trial work out okay?
We we settled it basically before trial started. So as far as I'm concerned, it worked out just fine. It was a copyright case, and there was a lot of moving pieces going on, and I was glad to see it get resolved.
Oh, I love to talk about copyright. As indeed you do.
It was a funny thing. It involved a person of note who gave someone a fan photograph, and the person they gave it to was a manufacturer of a certain type of product, and they decided to take the picture and run it as an advertisement along with words of endorsement, and the person of note never gave these words of endorsement, never endorsed the product, never supported it in any way, and they nevertheless advertised it anyway without paying him anything. We called it a copyright case, but really it was about misappropriation of name, image, and likeness was really what it came down to.
A good example of copyright would be if your name was Fred Jurex, and your image suddenly appears on condom adverts.
Somebody ought to copyright that one.
Okay, before we get into what I am convinced is going to be a very serious discussion, I want to share an email with you that I received yesterday. It was from Damien. I'll leave his last name out of it for right now. he's working on a new book. He hasn't even written the thing yet, but already it's been optioned for a movie. And he asked me if I knew any CIA types. Time to run away.
What does he want to do with CIA types?
Oh, well, this latest book has a very strong American connection. I chatted with him, and I said, "Moi? Me no spooks?" Oh, say it's not so. I only hang out with fine, upstanding people like you two gentlemen.
Hey, that's a good idea.
I resemble that remark.
Okay, so let's get into the nits and grits here. What happened in Boston was terrible. I have a friend, Robert Siciliano, who also happens to be a writer for the website I use. He was running in the marathon. He was only about two blocks away from the explosions. His family were about one and a half blocks away. Luckily, no one got harmed, or at least not in the Siciliano family. He opted not to talk to us today, and I think for good reason. But I was shocked by the entire event. As indeed, I think you two were. What did you think, Peter?
Well, to me, it seemed like a very amateurish operation. These two brothers putting together these pressure cooker bombs. But I also feel strongly that other people were very much behind it. And it's going to be very interesting to me to, as this unfolds, who all they're able to investigate or pursue as far as these other people who I believe were behind this. I just find it hard to believe that these two brothers cooked this up entirely on their own. But maybe that's what happened. I just don't know. But I do have a strong feeling that other people were behind it. And I think it'll be interesting to see how the investigation unfolds and if any other people are identified.
Your first thoughts, Sam?
Well, like Peter, I find it different on the amateur level. The word amateur is going to come up in my question, but in a different level, or my comments, excuse me. It's mind-boggling to me that these two planned it out. The actual horrific act was professionally executed, with to the point that you can. I used to live in Boston on Com Ave. I know the Boston Marathon well. As a kid, I used to run out and give water, lemons, and oranges to the runners coming up. People have to realize you can literally do that over the 26 miles. It gets a little bit more difficult where the actual bombing took place in today's more secure world. You know, you can't run out and get them because the professional runners are coming and the cameras. But when the more average runners, if the three of us were all not professional runners, but just people who like to run and participate in marathons, those are the bulk of the runners. The professional runners and the wheelchair people are well done when this bombing took place. They planned it knowing that the bulk of the runners and their families and their friends would be cheering them on. That's number one. Number two, that they knew that lots of foreign students in Boston, lots of foreigners running, lots of foreigners with family there, lots of backpacks. They had this down pat. They knew it was going to be the perfect storm, so to speak, to blow up, to make a statement. That I am, impressed with. But Peter used a great word, amateur. Their escape was terrible. I mean, it was the complete opposite of the plotting to create this mayhem. Not only did they not get away in the shootout, Tuesday night they were the younger brother, the one who was drove the worst getaway vehicle of all time, a boat in someone's backyard in a landlocked community. worst getaway vehicle of all time is partying at a dormitory at his college on Tuesday night. I do think Peter's right that they must have thought there had been others involved. They ended up being the patsies. I mean, I do agree with Peter that there's a bigger cell at play here. Hopefully we'll find out about it, and those perpetrators will be caught too.
The other person that I contacted was an ex-FBI investigator by the name of Terry Turchie. He was the lead guy on the Unabomber case. And, yep, he got Ted Kaczynski. He was also the lead guy on the Eric Rudolph case. And, yep, yeah, he did the biz. And, yeah, I said, Terry, you know, do you think this is Al-Qaeda or a lone wolf? And he immediately said, lone wolf.
Yeah.
It has all of the makings of a lone wolf.
Well, you know, prior to the 911 attacks, we saw two other attacks that, in retrospect, we now believe were perpetrated by Al-Qaeda. And those two attacks were the very first 911 attack and also the attack on the USS Cole. And those two attacks, although incredibly brazen and admittedly successful, they did not inflict a great deal of damage if you measure it in terms of loss of life. But then those were building blocks to what ultimately became a horrific attack that that everyone knows about at 9/11. And this does, you know, it doesn't seem to be the work of Al-Qaeda, because presumably they've learned how to inflict more devastation than was in fact inflicted. But I still can't help but escape the feeling that other people were behind this. But again, it may just be a feeling. I certainly defer to the better judgment of someone like an FBI person. It does feel very much like, you know, these devices were literally cooked up by these kids in a classroom or in the basement somewhere. And it's hard to escape that aspect as well.
Okay, Sam, do you think that they're part of a bigger thing?
Well, yeah, you know, your gentleman went after the Unabomber, and who I guess you could say was a lone wolf, Eric Rudolph, lone wolf. They were domestic terrorists, for lack of a better word, whatnot. I think you've got bigger fish. I mean, Boston Mass is huge foreign students, huge Islamic foreigners here, huge ones who already been here. Some on visas, some not. It's more difficult to get on visas now, as we know. Not impossible. That, and maybe what I think you've got is a new strain of terror, is that we've got that these cells, and I kind of agree with Peter, that there is a bigger, I feel, just like you, that they're going to attract these people, young kids, who are already here. I mean, that's half the battle. They've already got the people, and now they've got to brainwash them and get them to carry it out. Because the interesting thing was, if they were martyrs, they would have blown themselves up at the actual bombing, but they walked away from them. They put the bombs down, right? They put the bombs down. They blew up people's legs. Now, my son Josh is a terrorist fighter in the Phoenix Ravens, and he's based out in California. He's seen all sorts of stuff, been in Iraq, been all over there. And he said that's what caused Al-Qaeda, a mark of Al-Qaeda, is not body count, but mayhem, terror, and mutilation. That lasts long. That hurts the community longer than an actual body count, although, of course, a body count is terrible. But the car bombings killed, if you notice, always only killed 3-4, but injure hundreds. And that's what this was about. That's what he thinks, and I'm going to go with my son, too, is that the training they got is, with the ball bearings and nails, is to just rip out people's eyes, take out people's legs, take out people's, you know, arms, and you've now inflicted damage on 200 people that's going to last forever, along with the people who are dead. You know, we have a tendency in our country, in our culture, that someone's dead, they're buried, and go on with the living. Well, the ones who are damaged, I mean, people with thrown off legs and blinded and whatnot, you know, that is a longer-term lingering effect, and that's one thing he brought up. The question becomes, you can't do this. You can't Google this and do it in your basement. You know, you really can't. I mean, I never knew you could make a bomb out of a pressure cooker. I mean, I was looking at a crock pot the other day and go, my God, someone can make a bomb out of one of these things? Someone had to have trained these people, these two young men, to do this.
Hang on 2 seconds. My wife is using a slow cooker at the moment. I mean, I could be in danger.
Yeah, I mean, the one bomb blew up on the top of a building across Boylston Street. I've been there. That's a, you know, pretty not a big street, but and the building's only about 4 or 5 stories there. But it's still it's a heck of a jump from the power. And the one thing when I saw, I haven't seen all the video, I haven't seen all the pictures that they've gathered, but the one picture that when I saw that blew that older runner down from the blast. That was one of the more popular videos making the rounds on Monday and Tuesday last week, was how hot and white hot the not the smoke, but the flames came out of that, and I was just amazed that that type of firepower can come from two damn pressure cookers, and to think that right now nobody's safe anywhere. Nobody's safe anywhere. And that's
right.
That's the terror. We haven't even got into the fact that a 19-year-old hiding in a boat eluded 10,000 law enforcement officials and damn well shut down the city. That's another thing that just amazes me. It's a subplot on Thursday and Friday.
Right. But what amazes me, and I haven't gone looking on the internet for you know, ways to create bombs, because I'm pretty certain, you know, someone's going to be knocking on my door, you know, and saying, hey, why are you looking at this stuff? I mean, why are the, you know, recipes out there for everyone to look at?
Well, you know, we live in an amazing world right now in terms of the availability of information. And, you know, the same people who use these types of information to make terrorist bombs are also, I get the feeling, the very same people who prepare for the apocalypse and who prepare for the downfall of civilization. And they want to stockpile all kinds of weaponry, and they want to be prepared to defend themselves from the hordes that will attack, you know, once civilization crumbles. And so, you know, I imagine there, you know, the access of information to all people for all purposes is just something that's incredibly prevalent in our culture. We live in a world where there's almost unlimited information, it seems to me, available to just about everyone.
Okay, so
right,
I agree with you, Peter. But
yeah,
how do you Wouldn't you think whether lone wolves are part of a larger picture? Okay, we don't know either or.
It seems to me they have to practice this. Yeah, it's got to be some mixture of the two. The ideas that they used had to have come from other sources. Now, did they just take information from other sources and run with it? Or was there something of some sort of more active involvement of these other sources? I don't know. I really don't know.
Would you have wanted to test market one of these before you did it?
Well, that's what I worry about. That's a very good point. I worry that this is the first step. Again, I go back to 911. They made a first attempt and they blew up some stuff. You know, they caused some damage. Then they blew a hole in USS Cole. They caused some damage, and they were building up. And you know, that eventually led to 911. And what you talk about? Would you want to test this? Do you want to have a test run? Do you want to see what happens if you have a couple of people do this and see how much damage you can cause? I can't. Who can rule out that theory? I mean,
What I learned, the scary thing, of course, what's going on in Watertown, then Boston. Then you start thinking how this one kid crippled the whole city. Could you imagine if there was simultaneously seven of those things around America? We'd be shut down. We would be shut down. And that's the one thing you and I are on the same page about. Was this a test run to say, wow, because we have to fight. You know, one thing I've learned is, you know, going back to the 911 and running this thing through my brain this weekend, as you said, it's been a gradual buildup. There's a little here, a little there. It first started with hijacking a plane, one could say. You know, you could go on. It's a gradual step of sheer terror. Now, but then we react. Our law enforcement, governments, we react to the threat. Well, the threat doesn't go away. It then finds a new way to create havoc in a society, terror. And I think we saw that this last weekend. And the
there are two targets. There are hard targets. You know, hard as in, wow, that's going to be really hard. And there are soft targets as in, wow, this will be really easy. you know, they seem to be aiming for the soft targets. Next time, it may not be the Boston Marathon. Yeah, pick a street fair.
It goes a little bit back to our notion, some of our discussions on gun issues, and people, you know, there was the whole Sandy Hook, and people said, you know, guard the schools, guard the schools, guard the schools. And why stop at schools? I mean, we're vulnerable everywhere. We're vulnerable in movie theaters. We're vulnerable in schools. We're vulnerable in shopping centers. We're vulnerable at stadiums. We're vulnerable at marathons. There's literally no end to the gatherings of humanity that can be used as focal points for any kind of violent behavior.
Right.
In a free society.
Yeah, in a free society. You're right. In a free society. Unfortunately, the opportunities are virtually limitless.
And I agree. And I agree. And I think we have to. I want our law enforcement, whatever you want to say. I mean, I wasn't that impressed with 10,000 against a 19-year-old. I know a lot of other people thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I saw it a little bit differently. I thought, you know, with all the technology we have, heat sensors, drones, robots, everything that is at our fingertips, 10,000 law enforcement officials in a 20-block area couldn't get this guy after a firefight 6 hours before. He locked down a whole city. And I was like, it's not impressive at all. You know, and then to stand around after they caught him to chant USA, USA. I mean, that's no different than the Iranians screaming, raising their hands, shaking a fist at the great state in America. It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. It was about a game. It's not an Olympic sport.
But Sam, how can you fix it? You know, that's really the question.
Okay, that's a great question. You know, that is the question of our time. I think, you know, I noticed some company got to deal with terrorism more than any other. What Western-style country has to deal with terrorism since its inception, and maybe before that, is the State of Israel. My wife was there for 18 years. When the first reports came out last Monday about the bombs were put in trash cans, she turned to me and said, you know, in Israel, they don't have trash cans because the first suicide bombs were put in we're not talking trash cans, we're talking about public trash cans. They eliminated them from Israel. There's none in the streets of Israel because of that sheer situation. So then I went and Googled, you know, security measures in Israel over the years, did some research. And their philosophy there is, and I think it's something we're going to need to do, is don't anticipate the same exact attack. Anticipate a different, they're going to attack differently. They're going to use different technology. You have to outsmart them. You have to realize, and you can't give them easy. Peter, you're right. Everybody's an open target to these bad men and women. No question about it. That's about it in a free society. And as a free society, we have to be diligent, better, and whatnot when we're thinking about this. Because I learned something Friday, too. Even we have the manpower and women power. My God, 10,000. I was thinking, how can there be one murder in the city of Chicago, let alone 19 one weekend, when you can mobilize 10,000 people and go get the bastards? I mean, if you can mobilize 10,000 people to get one killer, then let that be doing that all across our country and wipe out gun violence everywhere. That's what I see. You know, why do we allow the terrorists? I mean, wow, he's a bad guy. Let alone, like this weekend in Chicago, there were 19 murders. There were four in Akron, Ohio. Why aren't we mobilizing our forces to go after these sons of a bitches? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hate to say it. We keep all these. Did you see the image we have? Of course, we were all day Friday. I mean, I was amazed to see police from all different, divisions, all the battalions of law enforcement running around the streets of Watertown, Massachusetts with semi-automatics drawn, taking beads on houses and whatnot. I mean, you know, that's, know, they were one of, I mean, it looked like they had the two singles. So be it. You know, I mean, they're probably, you know, after a firefight the earlier morning with two of their own were gunned down, and one was seriously wounded, they're ready to get this guy. Why? And I said, why aren't we using sort of manpower and woman power against the day-to-day violence, the day-to-day terror that grips some of our nation's cities and in this country? Why do we react? Wait for the accident, then react. And you know, then I'm finding out more things about that the FBI did investigate this guy, the Russian government, because they've had a fight with Chechnya for years and continue to do, warn people about him, and yet they let him go. Now, I believe he, and Peter, you might know the laws better than I do. I know you know the laws better than I do. I think he was arrested for domestic violence, was still here on a visa, yet was allowed to stay here.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that before. And but it wouldn't surprise me because, you know, lots of people have run-ins with the law for whatever reason, and it doesn't always automatically tip the police that this person is going to be a terrorist threat down the line. In hindsight, it's always 20/20. But at the time, you're dealing with all kinds of run-ins or infractions or what have you, and you have no way of connecting the dots or predicting the future is really more like it than saying this person's actually going to be a terrorist bomber. And if there are people behind it who are picking people to do it, then they would pick people who are extremely unlikely to be suspected. And a couple of brothers who are living in the States, and I guess one or both of them was in school, and they both, acted like they loved being here, et cetera. You know, they'd be very unlikely to be suspected terrorists. And it's just always difficult to prognosticate these things. It's hindsight is 20/20, but the converse is not true.
Yeah, it's, go ahead, Simon.
Okay. The real awkward question. You know, they've been here for a decade. That they escaped the problems in Chechnya, even though neither of them were born in Chechnya. That they were born in Dazik, Skin or something. Yeah. But yeah, it's close call. I mean, why would they suddenly become radicalized? Yeah, that they've lived in the U.S. most of their life, or most of reasonable life. Yeah, why would they want to go out and kill people that they've never met? I mean, there's no point.
That is a really interesting question. I know some people will have a tendency to say, "Well, who cares about that question?" Because we only care about what they did. We don't care why they did it. But I personally am really intrigued and fascinated by that kind of question. I don't know what created this level. I one thing I saw was they were showing on the news pictures of one of these kids' Facebook pages, and he had a picture of a close-up face of a snarling lion, and all I could think is, wow. I mean, this guy really. He really had anger towards something. At least that's what it seemed like. He was, he was making a comment just by a picture on his Facebook page. I don't know. And to me, those are interesting questions, and I'd like to know the answers. I don't know. Well, some of it must just seem like, they're young. Sometimes when you're young, you get caught up in thinking certain ways. It could have been caused by a movie, could have been caused by a video game, could have been caused by some religious experiences. But I suspect there's a lot more going on here than just you know, young boys acting ridiculously. There seems to be a lot more going on here than that, and I think it'll be interesting to try to find the answers. I don't know if we're ever going to get those answers.
Sam, assuming the young kid lives, do you think we're going to get some answers?
Well, first of all, I think it's a great question you asked, and I'm like Peter. Yes, I think it's a question that needs to be answered, at least totally investigated and answered. What flipped these kids, for lack of a better term? I've already heard one scenario that said they were recruited to be, and they were double agents, and that they were recruited by the United States to infiltrate cells because they had the Muslim background, the Chechenian and whatnot, and that they themselves became more hardened to the jihadist than they did working for the United States government undercover. Call it a conspiracy, call it that, but I think in trying to answer the question that you and Peter just posed is I think you have to look at all those things. What made these kids flip? Not only just to cook bombs and kill people, but to actually engage in a firefight with police officers on Thursday morning, and you don't see many people doing that with handguns unless you're watching a movie, hand grenades out windows and things like that. I mean, that's right out of a Die Hard movie.
This has elements of religious terrorism, but it also has elements of kids playing violent video games and watching movies like Die Hard or whatever it is on the movie theater screen.
Yeah, I mean, really, this kid he was shouldered, from what I heard, the older brother, when he came out, he did try to blow himself up with a suicide vest, and he did hurt another police officer, and then, of course, he was shot multiple times and died of wounds, and he's the one who had the snarling tiger. And I got to add something very strange here to show you what a small and scary world is. I already sent you an email, Simon. My older cousin is the boxing coach at Harvard. He coached that kid to the Golden Gloves winner, the older boy.
Wow.
Isn't that,
right.
Yeah, talk about a strange and small world we live in. And he said he was a great guy. The kid had potential to be a very, very good fighter. I mean, winning the Golden Gloves is pretty, impressive as it is, if you know about boxing in any community. And he did that, and he said he had him when he was in his teens, like 10 years ago, but he never showed anything of radicalism, craziness, I hate America, you know what I mean, any of that stuff, which begs the question farther is why? What turned these kids into killing machines? And the ability, and I still can't figure this one out at all, without an escape plan.
Right.
It really is strange. And all I can think about is I thought they were going to play market. I construct it this way. It's very simple, but and give me a few seconds, please. That they were supposed to kill themselves, be the martyrs, go to Allah, get the 72 virgins for eternity. They decided not to. They put the bombs down, set them off, and it was horrifically successful for them. They then returned to Cambridge, where they lived, and were partying and whatnot. I think they tried to get in touch with the cell beater that you think exists, and so do I. And those people were long gone. The people that had trained them, the people that had helped them financially, because living in Cambridge is no cheap place. That's a pretty expensive place to live, and outside of Harvard University. And all these strange things about, the uncle being crazy, not what he was saying the other day, the fathers in Russia flying back first class to America over the weekend, the other aunt up in Canada, then there's all that strangeness going on. And then these guys partying, then on Thursday, when the FBI released the pictures, these guys go to 7-Eleven and buy a Slurpee?
What
were they thinking?
Well,
you would...
there's a part of me that thinks that they didn't expect to get caught, and that everything kind of unraveled when they were quickly ID'd by photos and onlookers and things like that. At least that's part of what I think may have happened.
Do you think that's something from youth, Peter? That the young
that
people think they're never going to... Oh, you know what I mean?
You know, they didn't do a very good job of disguising their appearance. They walked right in front of surveillance cameras. Apparently, one of the people who lived and sadly lost both of his legs, but one of the people who survived, he looked one of them right in the eye before it happened, and they made a kind of eye-to-eye contact. And, as soon as this guy woke up out of his, out of being knocked unconscious by all this, as soon as he woke up, he knew immediately who did it. It was the guy he had locked eyes with before. So, it's hard to piece it together. It really is. They either acted like nobody was ever going to figure out they did it, or they didn't care, which seems to be the latter one. Seems to be consistent with they were going to kill themselves afterwards. But there's something about looking at those faces beforehand that seemed like a couple of guys who, to my gut, as I looked at that, they just didn't think they were going to get caught. But we'll see. I don't know how much information they're going to get out of the surviving person here, because apparently he's been shot in the lung or the throat or something, and he can't talk.
He's in bad shape.
Yeah, so
he's not as good a shape as they want him to be in the dark. And that's what it. I on a side note, I noticed that the Obama administration sent the name is like a rapid response interrogative unit to come, to talk to him. I said, "Oh, you mean the waterboarding?" And they said, "No, you mean you're sending waterboarders up there to talk to him? That's what you're sending up there." They gave this long name. I was like, what's going on? And I think it's really, it's ironic. Talk about irony. He's lying in recovery with 50 of the people he blew up are being treated who are still there.
You know, what is really ironic is being the doctor that has to save this kid's life. And I don't have the soundbite. In fact, soundbite doesn't exist. But it went along these lines. Usually, when we have someone with serious injuries, we try to help them. We'll hug them. We'll tell them life will be great. But we can't do this at this moment.
It's tough. I can only imagine it must be tough when you're a doctor and you have to treat this person. But I'm also equally positive that regardless of who he is or what he's done, they'll do their best. They'll keep him alive. They may not hug him and pat him on the head and tell him everything's going to be okay, but they'll do everything else they can to keep him alive.
They want the answers.
Yeah, I mean, at minimum, they want the answers. I would worry about the family members of the people who are coming in to see the others who are there. To me, this guy's got to be kept on tight security because, he's got a bullseye on his back right now.
Sure. You're absolutely right. I think he has around the clock. I wouldn't surprise me if he has around the clock security. And
there's only two cops, in his room at all times, and two cops outside the room at all times. Nah. This isn't major security.
Well, oddly enough, that doesn't seem like enough to me. But that would be a minimum in my opinion. But
what? Hey, one of them may toss him out the window.
I got to tell you, it's just he's got to be literally, aside from his physical health, he's got to be in my opinion, in real danger of life and limb just being in that hospital.
You know, it's funny how, you know, what you bring up, Simon, and that we, these bad men and women, we have to nurse them back to health to probably kill them later.
Well,
isn't that strange?
Yeah, it is. It is strange, and you know, it's all part of our civilized society. We're going to keep them alive so that we can give them due process and then give them the death penalty afterwards.
It is. It, I think, goes into that irony. It's Peter. What did you think of an attorney, and Simon, you too, because you're a civil rights guy, that he's not going to be read or has not been read his Miranda rights?
Oh, this is a really good one.
I thought that was very interesting because, you know, they can intentionally, if they want, dispense with the Miranda rights, but they can't use any of the evidence against him. So, in other words...
Incorrect.
Right? I'm sorry, incorrect.
Right. I don't often... go up against lawyers.
Safety exception rule.
I tend to lose, but
I always lose.
Well, you tell me, because that's what I was always taught. That's the whole purpose. The Miranda doctrine gives rise to the fruit of the poison tree doctrine, and the remedy for improperly failing to give someone their Miranda rights is that the evidence you uncover as a result, I mean, let's just take the classic example. You interrogate someone, you don't give him a Miranda warning, and he confesses to you. The confession is inadmissible. So
that's
standard Miranda doctrine.
We agree, Peter, you're 100% right, but
yeah.
Go ahead, Simon, give him the warning.
All right. There's a little, exit route, which basically involves, you know, instant danger. And you don't want someone to remain silent, so you don't have to read Miranda, right?
Well, you don't have to read Miranda at any time. But there are consequences of that.
It's called the safety exception rule, which came out of the Patriot Act, I believe. If you committed a federal crime.
You are correct.
All I know is that these guys aren't concerned about giving this guy his Miranda rights because they're not concerned about having enough evidence to convict him of these crimes. They don't care about that. They feel like they've got him, quote unquote, dead to rights. So they're not concerned at all about giving him a Miranda warning or getting information that is necessary to help them convict him, because they know they've got the guy and they feel certain they can prove it, and they're not at all worried about that.
What they're trying to do
is get information necessary to capture other people, in my opinion.
All right. Yeah. That's the other side. If you slap on the Miranda, you have the right to remain silent. You have the right to an attorney. It kind of screws up what they're trying to do. Are there more bombs out there? Are there more places where bombs might be found? And if he goes silent, under Miranda, he doesn't have to tell you. Yeah.
Well,
and
I think the real problem is getting a lawyer in there. I don't think it's him. If he doesn't want to talk, he doesn't have to talk. And if he wants to talk, he wants to talk, regardless of whether they read a Miranda or not. You'd be surprised and how many people talk after they get their Miranda rights. They feel like, I'm still going to talk because I can talk my way out of this. You'd be amazed.
right.
But the real thing is getting a lawyer in there with him, because his lawyer won't let him talk. He'll just shut him down. And it doesn't matter what the situation is. No lawyer is going to let his client talk like about anything until he has a chance to vet it first. So, you know, they're not. First of all, I don't think this guy can talk right now. So I think he's got an automatic right to remain silent no matter what. And then secondly, I think they want to get as much information out of him as they possibly can without giving him any kind of access to a lawyer, which would just, in their minds, just impede the process.
Well,
right.
Peter,
yeah,
Simon,
because the absolute first thing that any lawyer, and in fact, there is a public defender that has been assigned to the case, is going to say to him, shut up.
At this point, it probably doesn't matter, but the only thing a public defender could probably do for this guy is get information from him that he can use to try to get some sort of deal. And by deal, I don't mean that this kid gets off. I mean, you know, something like he gets life imprisonment and no death penalty if he gives you the names of the people who are responsible for this, if there are other people. And that's really the only, in my opinion, that's the only thing a defender could do for a guy like this in this situation, if in fact the evidence against him is ironclad. He could just try to get him, spare his life.
Sam, you've been quiet.
I was just remembering that I know that those two moron neocon Republicans, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, are screaming on the mountaintop to get him to be named and classified as an enemy combatant, to get him out of a civil court or criminal court and into a military tribunal, or get him down to Guantanamo, where they can really, where Lindsey and John can waterboard him themselves. I know that's been talked, that's been coming out. And,
well, I know that the great Commonwealth of Massachusetts is going to have a very strong interest in making sure that it inflicts its own measure of justice on these people, and the great Commonwealth of Massachusetts is not going to relinquish the right to prosecute these guys very easily, in my opinion.
It's going to be a federal case executed at Boston Federal Court, or is it going to go somewhere else?
To me, this is a state case. To me, that's what this is right now. There may be additional information, but to me, this is attempted murder of an actual murder of multiple people in Boston. It falls squarely under Boston criminal statutes. So, absent additional information which somehow turns it into a federal case, it stays a Boston, a Massachusetts case. And even if there's additional stuff, it doesn't remove it from state court. It just gives two different jurisdictions and two different potential punishments.
But all right, the feds are involved.
I'm sure the feds are involved. I'm sure they're investigating. I'm sure the state people are investigating as well. And I'm sure that at some point they'll make a decision about where he's going to be prosecuted and by whom. But at present, I think Massachusetts is going to try real hard to make sure they get to prosecute these guys. And I don't know if anything's going to be developed that will prevent them from prosecuting, even if there are federal crimes at stake and the feds get to prosecute him too on separate charges.
Okay, if the feds get there first, and I suspect they might, it is the death penalty. If the state gets there first, it's life imprisonment, because Massachusetts doesn't support the death penalty.
You know, I was wondering about that. I was wondering if Massachusetts, because it's a liberal state, and I was wondering if they had the death penalty there. And I was running through my mind thinking about, well, have I read about anybody being put to death in Massachusetts? And I couldn't recall anything. So
Salem witch trials.
So they've come a long way since
Salem. That's the last time it happened in Massachusetts, Salem witch trials.
Well, I'm not sure it'll be the death penalty in a federal crime either, but you know, all that stuff will get sorted out. I'm not convinced that it's going to be one or the other. I'm still leaning towards both separate prosecutions.
Two separate trials, you mean?
Well, you know, what happens is one trial may move forward before the other, but the other proceeding will still be pending. And sometimes, you know, the resolution of one can resolve a lot of the issues in the other. They can resolve in the Massachusetts trial that these people, in fact, did this, and then they can use those findings to try to determine if there were other people involved as well, say, in a federal investigation. That's just a hypothetical.
But why would we want to do this?
Well, I'm not sure the state is the best vehicle for determining if this was an act of terrorism across international borders or even state borders. But the state does have an extremely strong interest in prosecuting someone who committed a very serious felony murder on state soil. And I'm not saying that's the way it's going to play out, but I do think the state has an extremely strong interest in prosecuting these guys, and I think they have a constitutional interest in prosecuting them, and there's going to have to be some type of cooperation between state and federal officials to determine how this plays out, quote-unquote, who goes first, if there are two proceedings, and they're going to have to work together. But I do think at the end of the day, the state has the higher constitutional right here at present based upon the facts we currently have. But that could change if there's more information linking this to, you know, international terrorist activity. That could change. But right now, I think it's very clearly a state crime.
And Sam, your thoughts?
I think the thing that Peter's bringing up, I have a funny feeling that the feds, since they were kind of running the actual capture with the systems from state, you know, state and local law enforcement, are probably going to straight on the state. Although I agree with your assessment, Peter, but the feds are going to straight on the state and the city out of the way and run the show because that's what they're all about. My question is, do we think any of us, if there are other people, other cells, do you think we're ever going to find out, or do you think that it'll just be? There will be no transparency in the trial. Yeah, it'll be a trial, but I'm talking about if the investigation starts to show that there's more people involved, will we even know, or will they just go about trying to get those people on their own and keep the American people in the dark? I tend to be cynical and think that those in charge of these investigations come from the philosophy of the great movie A Few Good Men with Jack Nicholson, says you can't handle the truth, and therefore keep us away from knowing everything.
Well, you know, when they wanted the public to help, they put pictures up there, and they said, we know somebody out here has information about this. Help us get these guys. And so if they want the public to help, they'll let the public know. If they think that letting the public know will just interfere with their ability to catch people, then they won't say anything. Or sometimes what they do is they intentionally float false information just to use the public dissemination of it to convince the culprits they're searching for that you know, they're not being looked after, or give them a false sense of direction, so they do something else. So who knows? I suspect if they're looking for somebody they think is trying to hide, they probably won't reveal that because they'll want to have the element of surprise. But it's hard to say. And there still needs to be some evidence or information that there are other people out there. And right now we don't have it. And the only guy who's alive who can really talk about it can't talk and may not ever be able to talk. So it's there's a long way to go. And I do put a lot of credence into the FBI experienced person who said it sure looks like a lone wolf of a job to me. So it's just hard to say.
Uh-oh. Sam's gone quiet.
No, well, I thought you were going to say, I asked you too, what did you think, Simon? Peter answered, do you think that we can, the American, if there's more involved, If this is a bigger than, if this is a lone wolf operation, we'll know about it quicker than pretty quick. If it's a longer, if there's more people involved, do you think that they will share that with the American people, or do you think that we can't? They believe we can't handle the truth. If there's bigger organizations out there, there's a different strain of terror, if you will, that has hit the shores, and it's going to change.
There's something called the Freedom of Information Act. I suspect that it's just two whack jobs that have become marginalized through the internet. I don't personally believe they were part of a larger organization, but yeah, I could be wrong. And when it plays out, you can always go to the Freedom of Information Act and get the facts.
Yeah, 20 years after the fact.
You can get... You
20
can
years
get,
out. Yeah, you ever get stuff from the FBI? They black out everything. You get like three words on the page.
Right.
You can't even make out what the time is saying. Everything's blacked out. Yeah, you can... We gave you your documents you requested. You can't even make it... You can't get any information from it.
Okay. If you're really lucky... They'll even black out your name on the email.
Yeah. I'm like Peter, though. I have a feeling, like just this gut feeling, that this is that they couldn't have acted on their own. Again, weapon training. You just can't pick up an auto. Okay, we know they can. We know it's easy to buy a weapon, but it's not so easy at all to fire one. I have a handgun in my house for protection, and I hope I never have to use it. Because I don't know if I'm going to be able to pick it up, aim, and fire it at the people coming into my home with any accuracy. I hope I can. But here's you got this kid in a running gun battle in cars throwing hand grenades out the windows or explosive devices that were exploding, suicide vest on, and AK-47s shooting, like right out of the Die Hard movie in a moving vehicle. How do you just all of a sudden you decide, hey brother, let's do a pressure cooker bomb. Let's buy a couple weapons online or whatever from our friend Abdul down the street, and let's go kill the main people.
Let me ask a really silly question, and I apologize for my complete and total naivete. I know what a crock pot is, but I'm not sure I know what a pressure cooker is. And it seems to me that that's a completely different apparatus. What is a pressure cooker, and where on earth do you get one of those things?
Oh,
I don't know.
You can go to any store, all right?
Really?
It's a simple little device. But what you're able to do is lock the lid down, all right, which is why it's called a pressure cooker. Right? It increases the pressure inside. There's an emergency release device. Yeah, if the pressure gets too much, it'll pop up and.
I just did a Google search on pressure cookers, and the first phrase that came up was pressure cooker bombs. So that's probably a result of recent incidents. But I see that there's Wolfgang Puck makes a pressure cooker. There's some sort of all American pressure cooker, a stainless steel. So you're absolutely right, Simon. Apparently, you could go into Target and buy one of these.
Hey, Peter. What does it say? What do they cook in the pressure cookers? I mean, the crock pot. What do you make in a pressure cooker?
What do you really? Well, okay. there's an option to do a one of the search options was pressure cooker recipes. So maybe that's what I should look first.
Okay, please. I'm just curious.
Okay. What would take 2 hours in the oven can be done in 20 minutes in a pressure cooker.
Well, all I can think is, you know, you put a chicken or a roast in there. But part of what mystifies me is, okay, you can cook something in a pressure cooker and you can make a bomb with it, but you still have to be able to control when the bomb goes off. And you've got to my mind, these things are plugged in. So, you know, if you're going to transport it as these guys did, to me, it's a mystery. I don't know how you unplug something that you've been pressure cooking.
Okay. They hadn't been pressure cooking. If you look at the top of any pressure cooker, you'll notice that there is a little device that allows for an emergency escape of energy. Now, if you rip that out, yeah, you can fill the pressure cooker with your favorite explosive and, yeah, a small timing device. Yeah, you can even put wires, yeah, outside it. Ha ha ha. You got a lethal weapon. I mean, pressure cookers are quite well made. Yeah, so when the explosion goes off, not only are you going to get the bang from the pressure cooker, but you're going to get the nails, the BBs, and whatever
apparently, else. Apparently, obviously that's what you can do with it, because how many people were injured by these things?
Almost 200.
80? 200, wow, unbelievable.
Well, the so they would have to have gunpowder in there, and they'd have to have some sort of timing device because you couldn't plug it in, as you said, Peter. So how did they learn how to do this?
How do you get this thing to go off? Sam, you mentioned, I've run two marathons in L.A., two marathons, and my time, both instances, was between 4 hours and 4.5 hours. And I noticed,
good Lord, you're not very quick, are you?
No, well, you try running a marathon. You tell me how quick it is. But
I
noticed
to do
that, I noticed when these people were when these bombs supposedly went off, the clock at the finish line was at about the 4 hour mark. And,
perfectly.
Well, you're not going to get the elite. The elite runners are sub 3 hours. There's only going to be about 100 or so of those.
Right.
And then really good runners finish, somewhere between 3 and 4 hours. Really good runners are in between 3 and 4 hours. The best of the amateur class starts coming in at the plus 4 hour mark. That's the best of the amateur class.
Right.
But people trickle in all day long. You have people who take 6, 7, 8 hours to run a marathon. Boston is the elite marathon in the U.S. Everybody who's there is usually pretty darn good. So I suspect that you're going to get like you said, you're going to get a large mass of people coming in at about the 4, 4.5 hour mark,
mm-hmm.
because that's where you have to qualify for Boston. So these are going to be really good runners. You're going to get a lot of people coming in at that time. So if you're going to do this pressure cooking bomb, you've got to time it. And you've got to time it about, 4+ hours from the start. So you've got to know when it starts. And then you've got to set these bombs at the finish line. And I don't know how you do this. You've got to have it set them up so that you know they're going to go off at X period of time. And it seems to me, again, complete novice in this, you have to get these things to start cooking to get them to go off. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Oh no. This has nothing to do with cooking.
Well, what right. I mean by cooking is you've got to turn them on. That's all I'm – I'm just using cooking as a word for turning – getting them to start heating up.
Okay.
I mean, you just heat everything up at home, or you don't heat them up at all? Is that what you're saying?
Not in the bomb world.
Well, right. What do you do in the bomb world? You just put stuff in there and close the lid, and suddenly you've got a bomb? Is that what you're saying? I don't understand.
No. I'm clearly you have to put, you know, bits of ugly stuff like BBs, nails, stuff like that. You got to have some explosive device inside it. You know, and unfortunately, explosives apparently can be made at home.
How do you get the explosive to go off? Do you light it? Do you plug it in?
You need some method to ignite it. So
Peter, I understand what you're saying, and I think it's a very good point.
I mean,
don't put everything in there and close the lid and flip an on switch. They had to be cooking this thing. I agree with you to build up the pressure, and then it ignites.
I don't honestly know, but I'm asking these questions because I'm trying to dissect what they did so that we can
try to. How long it took them to do it? I understand what you're saying. It's an excellent.
So that we can try to get some sense of how whether or not they could have done this completely on their own or if they had to have some help. And obviously, we don't have enough.
I certainly
don't have the technical proficiency to understand the pressure bomb.
All right, but there also has to be something in there to ignite the thing.
And it couldn't have been done. And it couldn't have been done by cell phone because with all those cell phones there, anybody could have blew it up when they were walking with it. Right.
Right.
So they wouldn't have wanted any sort of device that could self-ignite before they picked their target location, which they probably walked around. And they walked around that marathon for a couple hours beforehand looking for the best place. Peter, I agree with you. They wanted to hit it right when the best time was, and that was at that four-hour-plus mark when the majority of the best amateur runners would be there with their family and friends cheering them on.
Yeah, because...
Right.
That does make sense to me.
I've done the marathon.
Right. So you've got this nice, bowl. You've got your damage in there. You've got some sort of porridge that, you know, will blow up, but it'll only blow up. Yeah, if you excite it, and so what you need is some method to, you know, get it all excited, and you need it's called a firing pin or something, but yeah, I mean. Obviously, you don't want to be there at the point that you click it. So, no, looks like these kids used a really simple electronic timer, and at the time when it went off, they were several blocks away, you know, kaboom. Why did they use the devices they did? Maximum devastation. Yeah, you create an explosion inside a pressure cooker. Pressure cooker explodes, and not only do you have the nails and ball bearings, but you've got the bits of the pressure cooker. Yeah, that they're going to help you.
Well, I guess we, you know, that sounds accurate. I don't know how the timer mechanism works, or how the energy supply for the timer mechanism works, or if they're using
a simple battery.
Just a simple battery. So they hook it up to a battery, and they hook up this device to a battery. They flip the switch or connect the energy, and then they know from prior experience, I guess, detonating these things, that 15 minutes later is when it explodes. I guess that's what we're saying.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, it used to be, you know, in the good old days, you could take an alarm clock, you know, pull the face off it, and, you know, solder on some couple of contacts, you know, and when the ticker came down, it would hit the contact, and kaboom. These days, it's much easier to use, you know, a $20 board that you can buy anywhere.
Well, you know, as we're talking about this, I've been searching on the internet, and apparently the Washington Post just ran an article about how a pressure cooker bomb works. So, you know, anybody can go out there and do a Google search, and they can find out how it works. And apparently these bombs are commonly used in Afghanistan, Nepal, India, and Pakistan. So that's where these bombs are most frequently used, according to this article. And
so we now have to worry. So now you have a situation that the copycats. Forget about the copycats yet. Okay, let's talk about how did you two. So, Peter, you and I Google search this. Are we going to go run out and make bombs and then go blow people up?
Well, I mean, one of the questions you have to ask is, were these kids copycats?
But who taught them? They have practice it without blowing the. Wouldn't you want to do this so you don't blow yourself up like with the Students for Democratic Society at the Putnam, you know, they bombed to go fix way back in the late. Some of them blew out a townhouse in New York City. Some died. Some of the more radical ones at the Weathermen. I mean, they had no experience. They thought they could make the bomb and blow themselves up. And it probably happens a lot more than we know about. But I don't care how much of a jihadist I am or how much of a true believer I am in whatever cause, I'm not going to make a bomb myself at Google. Oh, yeah, I'll get the battery, do this, do that. And then just put it out there because I'm afraid I'm going to blow myself up or it's going to be a failed mission unless someone tells me how to do it. And that's one of the big reasons I have this feeling other people had to have shown these kids, especially the older boy who was in Russia for about 6 months, is my understanding, or people locally. They must have test marketed somewhere, somehow. I just don't think, you know, without perhaps to have that sort of arrogance to make those bombs and do what they did.
Apparently, I'm in total agreement with you, Sam. I mean,
apparently, Al-Qaeda has an online magazine. I did not know this. Al-Qaeda has an online magazine, and one of the articles that appears online is Make a Bomb in the Kitchen of Your Mom, and it talks about using a pressure cooker to make a bomb. So,
why is that allowed on? I mean, you know, I understand we're in a food society, but that doesn't mean I can yell fire and it's loud as movie theater, correct, Peter?
Oh, Sam, you brought back so many law school classes when you just said that. My goodness.
I took one when I was in college. That's the only one I remember.
Well,
and Montgomery versus Madison, of course.
Technically speaking, you can yell fire in a crowded theater. It's just that you might be prosecuted after it for inciting a riot and causing some people to get hurt. Or you might be sued by the theater for any kind of lost ticket sales or anything like that. You know, it's tough. First Amendment is a very sacred right, and as a general rule, we prohibit anybody to talk about anything they want, especially in the nature of political speech. And there's all kinds of exceptions to this rule, and you know, it's very hard to just simply say this article cannot be published, this article cannot appear. And also, we don't know where these things are being posted. I don't know how you prevent, if somebody wants to post something in some remote corner of the world on the World Wide Web, I don't know how people can't read it if they want to. I don't know how to prevent that.
Right.
But I mean,
let's say, you guys decide to explore, how to make bombs, out of pressure cookers. I won't publish it. I'll tell you that right now. But, there's lots of places that would publish it. Should there be some censorship?
It's always easy after something like this to say, oh, yeah, sure, we should censor anything, for instance, that tells you how to make a pressure cooker bomb. But the reality is that it's always a lot more complicated question than that. I mean, there are supposedly articles on the Internet about how to make an atomic bomb. And then you have people who will step forward and say, look, terrorists can use this, but I can also use this as a weapon to defend my family from the attack of outsiders. So it's never as easy a question as people often think it is at first blush.
Right. I rather liked your comment. Sam, are you about to publish an article about how to make a pressure cooker bomb?
I never knew my naivete. I thought these type of things after 9/11 and with the ensuing Patriot Act and whatnot were eliminated from public viewing. So this is my naivete, because precisely for that things like this would happen, that maybe we would learn. Peter, I understand what you're saying immensely. It makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate the comment. But in the same token, I would sit there and go, that's one reason why I thought these people were trained by professional killers, terrorists, and whatnot, because you couldn't get this sort of information at the library. Obviously, I'm wrong. That they would have to be taught by professional murderers and killers and cutthroats, to do that. And I guess I'm wrong. I guess, what did you say was titled, Peter? Make a pressure cooker bomb with mom?
There's a webpage called Inspire, and it's sponsored by Al Qaeda, and there's all kinds of articles and things on it, and this is one of the articles. But there are other sources of this information as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary that's out there, because my biggest concern now is if you can do something like this with a pressure cooker full of ball bearings or BBs and roofing nails, what could prevent some creep to do something with the chemicals and do a mini dirty bomb?
I've heard people making bombs out of cooking their turkeys in boiling peanut oil. So, there's no limit to things you can weaponize, in my
opinion.
There's
no limit to how things can be. And that's why we want our anti-terrorist crowd, for lack of a better phrase, to be outthinking and outsmarting these people. And I don't think somewhere about these two boys, someone dropped the ball.
All right, but how do you raise the bar and stop the ball being dropped?
That's probably the $64 million question. I don't know, because I think Peter is hammered home today. Well, this guy may never talk. And I think we do need him to talk or communicate. Maybe he will be able to write or do something of that nature if he lives. I think that obviously he probably has Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts, talk to people in Massachusetts. Probably if he did anything, it's got to be traced via email. I find it very interesting that the Russian secret police, I don't know if they're called the KGB anymore, tipped off the United States about the older brother, and when the FBI investigated, they didn't find anything there. And yet, and that was only a couple of years ago, and here he is going down in a blaze of glory with a suicide vest on, shooting people, you know, in a firefight after he allegedly masterminded this horrific act. So
and the fun part, at least what I'm being told, is the younger kid got really scared, got in a black SUV, and actually killed his brother by running him over.
I read it this way. I bet you they made a suicide pact to make sure they were both dead. That he was already blown up and already shot. And I think the authorities are bullshitting about that. I think he ran, he freaked, panicked, got in the car and drove off and made his brother was either lying under the tire or he made sure he ran over him to make sure he was dead. That's how I read it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that the suicide bomb had partially gone off. He'd already been shot. And the brother had obviously been shot because they said he had lost a lot of blood in the boat. And that shootout that happened at 1 o'clock in the morning in Cambridge near MIT. So, I mean, remember that at that point, the older brother decided to be a martyr and blow himself up with the authorities that were surrounding him. The younger brother did not.
Well, we're never going to know the answer to all of this until we see the HBO movie.
A friend of mine said, and I don't watch it, but this is sort of like Homeland, the television show. Is that true? Do you watch that? I don't watch it.
No, I've never watched it, but it makes me wonder if that show didn't have some inspirational effect on all of
them. Yeah, again, I don't know. I don't watch it, so I couldn't comment on it. But he said it just the whole thing reminded him of an episode from that, Peter, we know where we can buy assault weapons, right? They allegedly had hand grenades, and I got to think those are probably illegal to buy and to own, handmade hand grenades.
That is a fascinating question. I wish John was here because he probably knows exactly where you can buy hand grenades. I have no idea.
If they were hand grenades, they said they were throwing explosive to fight hand grenades. Now maybe if they were handmade hand grenades, that's even more impressive. That these guys, out of the blue, because they Googled it, they read that magazine, How to Make a Bomb with Mom, where they pulled pressure cooker bombs plus hand grenades plus shoot it out with assault weapons. And don't forget, the older brother had a suicide vest on.
That's
pretty impressive arsenal for two people in a state of, and by the way, Massachusetts is one of the toughest states to have weapons like that in. Isn't that odd, too?
It's
one of the toughest states to have to get stuff like that. Not pressure cookers, obviously,
to the best of my knowledge, it's not illegal to own a pressure cooker in
Massachusetts. One more pressure cooker bomb that goes off, it probably will be.
I'll be honest with you. I'd be afraid to buy a pressure cooker.
So would I.
I'm the kind of guy.
Blow up in my house.
I'm the kind of guy who that I would blow the thing up, and I wouldn't even consider buying one of these things because I'm the kind of idiot who would turn it on and go out and do some exercise or something and come back and I'd be afraid to open it for fear it would blow up.
I'd rather put the turkey in the oven, Peter. I'm with you. Put the turkey in the oven and let it boil for a while.
Why not just a good
Okay, folks, we're just about flat out of time. Peter, your final thoughts.
Well, I know occasionally, sometimes we make light of some of these things, but it's really a sad and tragic event, and I worry about the health, the mental health of everyone everywhere. I mean, every day it seems to me we hear some other horrible event with people doing just crazy, awful things. I don't know where any of us are safe. I don't know what the answers are, but I sure hope we can try to avoid things like this in the future. It's just a terrible tragedy.
And Sam?
First of all, really good to be back, guys. I'm sorry we're talking about such horrific events, but it's really good to be back this weekend, let me tell you. I like you, Peter, we had the killings in a movie theater. Never thought that would happen. We had this event. Starting to worry of that. Are we going to be a country that every day, I read the BBC News, there's a car bomb somewhere in the world. Most of them in the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, or Syria. Every day you hear about it. Is that going to be what we're going through? Is that going to be the new strain of terrorism, whether it's domestic or foreign or a little bit of both? And no one's safe anymore. And that's as a father and a grandfather. By the way, I had a grandson. My grandson was born on Friday.
Congratulations, Sam.
Yeah, thank
congratulations.
You. And so that was the good news. That was the blessedly good news that unfortunately some people died this week, but lots of people were born. And that's a great thing, and I hope they live long lives. But like you, Peter, I'm afraid too. I'm afraid for everybody. And I don't want to lock myself in a room and realize we have to live in a free society. But we somehow have to get to that ultimate balance. And well, we're smart enough to do it. We have the power to do it. We have the money to do it, the brains to do it. We have to be able to balance security with freedom. And I hope that happens in my lifetime and no more of these events ever happen, because it is sheer tragedy. And my heart goes out to all those people, not the ones who just died, but they have to live their lives with no limbs. And, the ultimate, and again, another irony, they go to a marathon. They're probably runners themselves. People who love to see people run and compete and finish at the line, and their legs are blown off, and that's just really sad.
Okay, I'm being seriously whined at in my ear by the automated producer. I want to thank both of you for taking time out to talk to me today. Great program, and I'm sure we'll be picking this up again next week, because maybe we will have more information, more hard information. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Have a great week, you two.
You too, everybody.
You. Okay, we're out of here.